Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Unit 5 looks ahead to the new semester in January and a return to hybrid learning.
Rather than only looking at the metrics for McLean County, we're going to more closely monitor our metrics within the building.
Superintendent Kristen Weichel says they're also starting in-person classes later to see how holiday infection rates are. Plus, rural hospitals are under tremendous strain from the pandemic, particularly now with the virus so widespread. And Bloomington Normal musicians have taken a huge hit from the pandemic. Hear how they're adapting 9 months in. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. McLean County reports 16 COVID-related deaths this week. That breaks last week's record. The latest deaths are a woman in her 60s and a man in his 70s. Both were associated with long-term care facilities. The McLean County Health Department says hospital capacity dropped to 15% and 12% of ICU beds remain available. The Health Department notes progress in regional metrics could enable a return to Tier 2 mitigations soon. That would enable bars and restaurants to reopen. Governor J.B. Pritzker this week outlined $700 million in state budget cuts, with plans to negotiate more than $1 billion of additional cuts in coming months. Some Democrats are already pushing back on that idea. Hannah Meisel has more.
A group of progressive Democrats instead wants the state to look at rolling back corporate tax breaks, but the business community views those tax incentives as opportunities for growth. And the Illinois Chamber of Commerce derided the Democrats' ideas as too vague to work. Meanwhile, embattled House Speaker Mike Madigan, whose own speakership is in question come January as a federal probe draws nearer, was mildly critical of the governor's budget ideas this week. Pritzker wrote it off as engagement, taking the opportunity to once again slam Republicans for defeating his graduated income tax proposal at the polls last month.
I'm glad that members of the legislature are engaging. They seem all to be on the Democratic side. The Republicans have been mute entirely. Turns out they have no plan of their own.
The state's current year budget is nearly $4 billion out of balance. I'm Hannah Meisel.
Governor J.B. Pritzker says he's still withholding judgment on his appointed director of the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs after a deadly coronavirus outbreak at the state-run veterans home in LaSalle last month. Veterans Affairs Director Linda Chapalavia testified at a marathon hearing about the outbreak in which she defended certain practices, but ultimately took responsibility for the deaths as the agency director. Asked whether he still has confidence in her, Pritzker said he's waiting for the completion of an official investigation into the outbreak.
Look, I want to know everything that occurred here, and that's why the investigation that is ongoing is going to be extraordinarily informative. And again, I'm going to hold accountable people who deserve to be.
Initial findings from the Illinois Department of Public Health and Federal Department of Veterans Affairs found shortcomings on COVID protocol within the home. 9-year-old Kai Marks and her 6-year-old brother Christopher say they wanted to share the holiday spirit with the rest of Bloomington Normal. Kai says they started an online fundraiser for the Home Sweet Home Shelter.
I was looking for some place like that kind of homeless people to help because this year's been hard. So me and my mom came up with the Mathathon and I told my brother and he said, okay.
Kai and Christopher wanted to raise $200 with the Mathathon. They hit that within an hour and ended up with $3,000. Co-workers, family, friends, and people who knew of the Marks family donated. The Marks children used the money to order from Amazon things like razors, diapers, shaving cream, and food. Dad Chris Marks says people should emphasize kindness in hard times and put petty differences aside for those in need.
They understand the importance of giving back, and they really actually enjoy doing that. So that's why this was really fun for them and a way for them to impact the community even at their young ages.
Chris Marks says teaching his kids this lesson will make giving part of their DNA. The family dropped off the items today. A popular Netflix miniseries has helped game merchants in central Illinois. The Queen's Gambit is about a girl chess prodigy who comes of age in the 1950s and 60s. Jamie Mathey owns Red Raccoon Games in Bloomington.
I didn't even know what was happening. All of a sudden, chess sets, which we hadn't sold in months, just started disappearing off the shelf. All the chess sets were actually picked up, and we can't even get those starter sets in.
Mathey says some customers looking for chess sets say they played years ago and want to start again because of the TV series. Mathey says the last time a surprise TV hit prompted sales was Stranger Things, when people sought out Dungeons & Dragons merchandise. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's public media. Many rural areas avoided the worst of the pandemic in its early stages. Now it seems the coronavirus is everywhere, straining hospitals that have few resources to address an ongoing health crisis. Eric Stock looks at how two rural hospitals in central Illinois are managing.
Hospitals with fewer beds can fill quickly during a pandemic. On Thursday, nearly half of the patients hospitalized at Abraham Lincoln Memorial Hospital in Lincoln were COVID patients. It was soon apparent in talking with Dr. William Lytolis how busy they are. As he speaks, a medical alert blares overhead.
Sorry, that's what you're hearing in the background is the ER is getting busy. We actually went to stage one about 10 a.m. this morning.
Stage one is when extra medical staff is brought to the emergency department to treat a surge in patients. Hours later, the Lincoln Hospital advanced to stage two. That's when additional beds are brought to the ER. Like most rural hospitals, Lincoln doesn't have intensive care beds, so patients with more severe symptoms are sent elsewhere. That's not always easy when bed capacity is limited nearly everywhere. Paul Scourin is CEO of Warner Hospital in Clinton. In late November, the hospital had a patient who needed emergency care for a heart problem. The hospital was full, including all COVID beds. Staff called other hospitals in the region. None would take the patient.
Other hospitals might have thought we were trying to transfer a COVID patient, but we ended up emergency helicopter that patient to a hospital in St. Louis. I've been here 6 years. That was only the second time we've used the helicopter.
The incident shows how quickly rural hospitals can run out of space to treat patients most in need. The facilities in Clinton and Lincoln are both critical access hospitals. That's a federal designation that sets different reimbursement rates to enable hospitals to provide care in rural areas. Administrators at both facilities say it's been a challenge maintaining adequate staffing as healthcare workers deal with the effects of COVID personally and professionally. Dolan Dalpas, the CEO of Lincoln Hospital, says at one point 10% of his workforce was down.
We ask our staff to take on multiple roles, which has been very important during this pandemic. You know, we've deployed physical therapists as safety monitors. We don't have a large bench.
Many rural hospitals are struggling to keep enough medical staff on hand. Pat Scow is executive director of the Illinois Critical Access Hospital Network. She says the industry didn't anticipate how much healthcare staff would be sidelined, either by their own COVID case or exposure or a case in their own family. Scow says the problem is magnified in rural areas where the pay is typically less.
There's just no more staff available. And if there are agency or additional staff, often they're attracted to the larger facility, which may be able to pay a little bit more.
Paul Scourin at Clinton says his hospital was better off than most in rural areas. Employment rates in DeWitt County are strong. There are fewer Medicaid patients, and there are four regional hospitals less than an hour away.
We really have access to a lot of resources and other hospitals that work with us that more rural hospitals, say in southern Illinois, do not have. Some of those hospitals are 75 to 100 miles away from the next hospital.
That hasn't slowed rising death counts. DeWitt County ranks among the 50 with the highest COVID death rates in the state, so it was among the first to get COVID vaccines. Scowron says he's glad the vaccine is here, but he's worried its arrival will cause some to get lax about COVID safety. Daily coronavirus tests at the hospital were down sharply in recent weeks.
That seems to be affecting some of the public's attitude as to not necessarily needing the testing as much as previously. I don't know that that's the proper attitude, but that seems to be part of the mentality right now.
William Litolis at Lincoln Hospital says COVID care is much better now than it was in the spring. The medical community has learned through trial and error, even if options are limited. He says the steroid dexamethasone has been largely effective. The antiviral drug remdesivir has shortened hospital stays. Those successful treatments can easily get lost in the numbers as COVID deaths escalate across the region and across the country. Litolis says your chances of surviving the coronavirus may have improved, but more cases will lead to more deaths.
I think now we're seeing a very large number of people with COVID. We are seeing more deaths simply because we have such a large numerator of people who have the disease.
Logan County has reported 29 COVID-related deaths. DeWitt County has had 18 deaths. In both cases, that's about one death per 1,000 residents. That's more than double the death rate in McLean County and is higher than Cook County, which has had nearly a quarter of all COVID deaths in the state. And there may also have been greater skepticism about the coronavirus in smaller towns, especially early on when large outbreaks were mostly in urban areas. Paul Scowron of Warner Hospital says over the summer, he was frequently asked how much money the hospital makes on COVID patients.
We didn't get paid any more for a COVID patient than we did for a pneumonia patient.
Dr. William Litolis at Lincoln Hospital says fighting the coronavirus has been a slog these last 9 months, but he says the vaccine will be a game changer, and that brings him hope. And so do stories of personal will. He recalled a 91-year-old woman in his care who contracted the coronavirus. Early treatments failed. The doctor discussed end-of-life decisions with her family. The next day, she got better, and she kept getting better. Litola says he can't point to a specific treatment that worked other than her determination and maybe some fresh air. Hospital staff found a way to sneak her outside to get some sunshine after she had been stuck in the hospital for a month.
We looked to make sure we weren't violating any policies, which we were not. We put her in a wheelchair, we took her outside, and we called her daughter on her cell phone. And her daughter picked up and said, "What are you doing outside? You're sick." It was just amazing.
Litola says the woman has since been discharged and is doing fine. Hospital administrators know there are still many tough days ahead, but Warner CEO Paul Scowron is bullish on a return to normal in 2021.
At this point, I'm feeling that by May, we'll be able to have May days in Clinton again very safely, and we're all going to be able to get together and go to church and not be as concerned as we are now.
In the meantime, the hospital officials all said the coronavirus's damage can be limited by the choices we make to protect ourselves and those around us. I'm Eric Stock.
Logan County announced three more COVID-related deaths today as Illinois' COVID death toll topped 15,000. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Unit 5 schools in Normal say they will wait for guidance from the State Board of Education before deciding whether to require coronavirus vaccines for students and staff. Superintendent Kristen Weichel joins us for a monthly conversation. Vaccines are starting to percolate through the population. How do you see that rollout affecting Unit 5 plans?
Well, I think we'll be impacted depending on how quickly the general public and educators can become vaccinated. You know, so I've seen pictures of healthcare workers getting vaccines this week in neighboring communities, and I'm hopeful that educations will be one of the early ones to receive the shots if they choose to. And then also our general community, you know, we need that herd population to be vaccinated.
You know, under most projections, it'll be months, perhaps even late summer, by the time there's widespread coverage from vaccinations. What does that do to plans for the spring semester for in-person versus online?
So we adjusted our metrics. We are adjusting our metrics for January on. And so rather than only looking at the metrics for McLean County, we're going to more closely monitor our metrics within the building. You know, we've seen a lot of districts who have been able to open their doors and keep kids in school, just temporary pauses. So we will be looking to bring back all of our students in a hybrid fashion on January 11th. The week of the 5th through the 8th, we're going to be fully remote. Just allow a few more days to hit that 10-day marker in case, you know, our students or staff are with families and friends over the holidays. And the 10-day kind of signifies the number of days for quarantine if they were to be a close contact. Then we're transitioning to hybrid. So that way, you know, right now the estimates are that the peak COVID, you know, hit will be in late January. So we want to make sure that, you know, all of our buildings are remaining hybrid. So that way we can ensure that students are sitting 6 feet or more apart from one another in the classroom. We can manage that for lunches and the passing periods. You know, then we'll be looking at, is it safe for students and staff to be able to bring back some groups, you know, 5 days a week?
New school board elections will happen in April. On the first day of filing, 5 candidates submitted petitions for 3 open seats. None of those were the incumbents, by the way, so it may be a crowded field. What do you look for in a school board member? And what do you look for in a boss, I guess you call it?
Sure. You know, I first and foremost, I want someone who's going to care about students and understand that, you know, the school board sets policy, and it's up to me, the administrative team, to carry out the policy that the board sets. So I want someone with good intentions for to benefit the students in our community.
What issues do you most want to hear candidates speak to in their campaigns, regardless of what their positions are?
Again, I really want someone who is concerned with helping students academically and socially emotionally, and knowing that a school board member's role is to set the policy. And I think that can come out through a lot of different topics that they might discuss.
Do you want them to address potential cuts by the state because of the budget deficit at the state level?
I'm not sure that as an individual board member that they, I mean, they're entitled to their own individual thoughts, but the board as a whole makes those decisions. And I'm not sure that we've fully seen what the state of Illinois will do regarding the budget, you know, moving forward.
Do you want to hear them address how they would view a referendum?
I can certainly see where some people might discuss that.
You're not biting on that question, though. Okay.
I'm not.
A former staffer filed a federal lawsuit alleging the district failed to protect her from sexual harassment and alleging retaliation by the district. To be very clear, the alleged conduct in the complaint happened before you came to Unit 5. But what response is the district making to that suit that you've been aware of since Monday?
You know, as of today, while we're talking, like, we have yet to receive any, you know, report or filing.
We made you aware of it Monday, though, and you were certainly able to get it from the federal courts. Have you done so?
Well, as I said, again, we haven't received anything, so I can't really comment until any complaint has been delivered to us and we have an opportunity to review.
You are just shy of 6 months in the job. It has been a whirlwind. Sum up what you feel you've accomplished in that time.
You know, I hope that people would look at and recognize that I've done what I can to make sure that students and staff are safe. I've had the opportunity to talk with a large number of staff and parents and community members. And even though it's all happened virtually, not all of it, a lot of it's happened virtually, with me also having the opportunity to be in some buildings, I really appreciate the opportunity to start to build relationships, because I think a good relationship's at the core of all good work, you know, that any entity can do. And then, you know, obviously we continue to work on the equity and the diversity in the district through a variety of means, ranging from reevaluating the processes that we have in HR to retaining quality staff who might be underrepresented, to looking at the curriculum and instructional needs of our students and making sure that we're looking at really kind of everything that we do through an equity lens. So I know there's a lot of work that we need to continue to do, but I'm really proud of everything that our staff and our administration and board has done thus far.
Kristen Kendrick-Weichel is the superintendent of Unit 5 Schools. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. The pandemic has hit full-time performing musicians especially hard. There are no places to perform for in-person audiences. WGLT's John Norton explores how difficult it has been for some musicians in Central Illinois and how they have adapted.
As a folk singer, I complain a lot. I'm going to do a lot less complaining, I know.
That's Delavan native and Bloomington resident Cody Dekoff. He plays and records as Chicago Farmer. Dekoff had just returned home from touring on his new album, Flyover Country, when the pandemic began. Plans to head back out ended.
I can't wait to get back at it and have all those hardships again. I'd give just about anything to have him back right now, to be honest.
Dekoff says he has a little cushion. His wife is a teacher, but it's still not easy. Many musicians have embraced live streaming performances to stay in touch with their fan bases. Dekoff, too, but he admits being dragged kicking and screaming into the digital age.
I tried to ignore that and just be old school and just hit the road and, you know, not have to deal with that side of things. I think if I start doing that now, it'll definitely benefit down the road. There's no more waiting around on that because it's definitely here.
Dekoff now performs weekly on various live streams. He says those have forced him to up his game from stage and club shows.
People are tuning in, you know, all over the country to watch me at the same time, and they tune in every week, so I have to put on a new show every week. So it's been cool. It's kind of like a comedian. You can't keep dishing out the same jokes. You got to keep writing and keep things fresh and keep coming up with new material.
Some musicians say they think changes forced by the in-person music shutdown might actually help them later. Like Dekoff, Central Illinois-based musician Edward David Anderson leaned gradually into live streaming. He says he'll monetize those internet performances next year.
I think that that's something that we learned over the course of however many months here and streams that can probably work for us even after all this is over. We've found that there's definitely an audience in that regard.
But live stream concerts don't replace gigging. Anderson says the financial pinch has forced him to make money from music in other ways. He says he has written music for others and records as a sideman and even recorded video pieces for conferences. It's a struggle, but Anderson says he has found quality of life benefits.
You can maintain a good connection with your bass without having to just run so hard and be gone so much. I do really enjoy sleeping on my old bed. And waking up with my family.
That bed is now in rural Havana. Anderson and his wife, Kim, moved from Bloomington to save money lost to the pandemic.
It's just classic life. You could let it own you and or you can sort of turn it on its head and try to make something out of it. And that's really what Kim and I have tried to do.
The move created other opportunities. Anderson is working with the Havana Chamber of Commerce and the Park District on festivals and a music series.
Without the pandemic, we don't look at houses. I don't get out. I'm definitely on the road. I'm tired. We have the baby. We don't find any of this, and none of these doors start opening up out here without the pandemic and the time to do it.
Musicians always strive to adapt, even in good times. The irregular nature of the work requires flexibility. Janae and Jay Thomason recently moved to full-time performing musicians. When the pandemic hit, the duo known as Hot Sauce Universe searched for other options.
Right. Like, what, are we going to go get a retail job? Like, that's not, we'll be at just as much risk as playing out.
The Thomasons have also embraced the digital side of their business, but not with a grudging addition to what they already did. For them, it means a complete shift in the business model.
At this point, Thomason Music has taken the front seat, hands down. Hot Sauce Universe is on a hiatus.
The focus now is online guitar lessons, music, and venue reviews, blogs, and other ideas they're still working on. But Jay Thomason says the objective is the same.
How is it going to bring good to people during this time?
Yes.
So the idea of doing virtual music lessons for people when they're stuck at home, mm-hmm. something I've wanted to do for a long time anyway, the ultimate goal is to still bring good to people somehow as they go through this.
The Thomasons, Edward David Anderson, and Cody Decoff have all suffered financially. They say aid money, if another relief bill passes Congress, would really help and would be welcome. But all three also say the changes they have made let them at least get by. They say others in the live music scene deserve help. Janae Thomason says sound and light engineers and crews in particular.
That's their job is the live performance. They're not selling albums on the side.
You know? Right. And if those kind of people don't get some kind of relief, when we do come back, the music industry as a whole is going to be missing a left foot.
Members of Peoria's Way Down Wanderers also worry about the venues. Austin Thompson is the co-leader of the Americana Ensemble.
Luckily, we'll still be able to play music, but if we don't have anywhere to play, you know, that will be very tough.
The group's Colin Krause says there has been one silver lining for the band during the pandemic. Their drummer, John Mirakowski, has had time to complete his jazz performance degree from the University of Illinois. I'm John Norton.
This moment's calling, there's a new day dawning. But I'm not following, I wait for tomorrow's morning light.
That's the Way Down Wanderers from their self-titled 2016 album. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.